You're listening to Menders with clinical psychologist and leadership consultant, Dr. Nicola DePaul. Each week, get a dose of real-world inspiration from free-thinking leaders, top clinicians, healthcare innovators, and myself. Looking for quick fixes or standard management tools? Try someplace else. Motivated to maximize the resilience and diversity of your team, sustain your momentum as a leader, and transform your healthcare system? Welcome to Menders. Well, welcome back. Thank you for joining me again. This is the final episode of the special bonus season of Menders, and I'm really excited to be with you today. So this is all about how do we create a system that allows us to listen really well, to be engaging our staff or our employees on a daily basis, and then to be responding to their needs in a way that feels easeful or simple or clear. So I want to just start out by sharing a personal example. I am a creature of habit, and maybe you are too, maybe you're not, but I thrive on routine. And over the years, my routine has changed, of course, but my current routine is I get up early, I take a 30 to 45 minute walk with my lovely dog, Sylvie. She is a fabulous and very faithful companion. And then, of course, I come home, I get ready for the day, I do my work day, I come home, and this is where my routine really kicks back in. After dinner, after putting my daughter down for bed, that is me time again. So I take the time to do something that feels calming or caring for myself in the evening. Usually it's reading a book. I do my gratitude practice, and I end my day with my mindfulness practice. And this practice or set of practices just helps me transition to sleep. I did forget to mention, at lunch, almost every single day, I take a walk and I try to get in like 30 to 35 minutes. So I know it sounds a little silly hearing about my routine, but the reason I'm sharing this with you is that my routine anchors my day. It helps me sleep and it manages my pain. I used to have just absolutely chronic upper back pain, and I don't even know how many years I had that. And then I started walking a lot more, trying to get my 10,000 steps in every single day, which requires two walks. But I noticed that when I was walking that frequently, the back pain just disappears, and it comes back if I'm not walking really consistently. I'm also somebody who struggles with insomnia, and I treat insomnia in the clinical work that I do. So I know how to get good sleep, but of course, sleep is not something we can always force, but it is something that we can promote and cultivate through good practices. And so I find that for myself, the evening practice of mindfulness helps me with that transition to sleep. So my routine anchors my day and helps me manage things that are otherwise pretty distressing and problematic: chronic pain and insomnia. So I'm not actually trying to give you advice on what you should do to take care of your body, though if those things work for you, more power to you. What I really want you to think about is, in your system, your work habits or your systems for listening, for employee engagement, and for employee response are really like daily habits. So sometimes they feel boring, or maybe you're doing them without thinking about them or bringing your full intention into the moment. And yet they can still be really powerful. And when we fall away from these habits or when we stop doing them, we tend to see challenges crop up. So let me give you an example. Hey, menders, if you're listening to this and you're a healthcare leader struggling to get a handle on the metrics that matter and you're motivated to improve employee engagement, workplace satisfaction, and overall well-being, listen up. Whether you have a tiny system or a large, complex department, there is a clear path you can take to go from burnout culture to cultural renewal. Go to mendinghealthsystems.com to check out my organizational well-being assessment. This mini course will walk you through an organizational self-evaluation that will help you identify your next steps to boost organizational well-being today. So pause this episode and head to mendinghealthsystems.com right now. So I worked with a lovely leadership team for about five years. And so what that looked like was I worked with the leaders. We did an annual survey. We checked in on how their people were doing. They made a lot of changes over the course of the first couple years, maybe the first 2 years, to really fine-tune things and help their employees, you know, ensure that their employees' needs were getting met. After the first 2 years, you know, they weren't necessarily making big changes. They just kind of checked in with their employees. They were very intentional about it, but honestly, the feedback wasn't that helpful. And let me clarify. So I really should say a lot of the feedback at this point was like, hey, we're pretty happy. We're doing well. And we saw their well-being scores kind of level off, their workplace satisfaction, engagement, everything kind of looked good. Burnout was low. So there wasn't a lot to be done. So after like 5 years, COVID hit and we stopped doing the survey. We stopped checking in, partly because it seemed like a relatively unimportant thing to do. Given how much stress everyone was under, all of the other demands, and nobody was in person, and this survey used to be given out in an in-person retreat. So all that to say, the team stopped checking in to see how people were doing. It wasn't intentional, but it also had seemed like the big team was in such a good place. Maybe checking in wasn't that important. So what happened next? Well, obviously, everybody knows COVID was extraordinarily stressful and things started to slip. So it was, I think, 2 years before this team checked in on their staff again. And they were actually so fabulous at the survey that they no longer needed me. So I was not privy to the specifics of their reconnection with their team, but I did hear a bit about it and about why they decided to re-engage in the survey process. And what they said was, hey, we see that this check-in process was of high value. Even when it seemed like nothing was happening, we were still getting a pulse on our employees, and we were at least hearing that everybody was fine. And unfortunately, we recognize we stopped checking in at a really critical time when people were not fine. So to their credit, what they did was they reinstated the survey. And I'm sure they're going through those good habits of, again, engaging their staff, listening, and then figuring out how do we respond to our employees' current needs. So I want you to be thinking about this for yourself. How can I create a system that feels like an easy routine that just fits in with my daily workflow or my annual workflow, and that you don't necessarily have to put a lot of effort in to keep it going? So you're creating something relatively simple that is giving you this opportunity to check in with your staff and to go through the process of making sure that your team is fully on board in a regular way. So, some things to be thinking about. Can you create a system that allows you to implement you know, whatever it happens to be, some strategy to get information from your people rapidly every time you try a new action. So every time you implement a policy change or try something new, you want to be getting feedback from your team. Is this working? Is this not working? Are there unexpected challenges? Are there barriers? Is something problematic? And what can we do about it? You also want to provide opportunities for both structured and informal feedback after every one of those action steps or policy changes is implemented. So you're kind of informally checking in and you're formally checking in. And you want to take 100% responsibility for the actions that don't turn out so well. Did something not work? Yep, ultimately that comes back to you. But when you've implemented a systematized feedback cycle, it's going to be so much easier to do because you're hearing what's working, what's not working, and you can quickly take responsibility for those things that are problematic and you can fix them. And as you go about this feedback cycle, I want to just remind you, you need to be connecting with your why, your values, because it is your values that are going to ground you in making these changes. So any changes that you engage in after hearing from your employees have to be consistent with your values, with the values of your organization, and with the values of your employees. And if you're not hitting on that values consistency, you're really going to be at risk of going off course. Even if you have a systematized feedback cycle where you're hearing how things are, that's really going to help. But you got to keep those values in mind first. Because what we're doing here ultimately is we're creating trust and we're building accountability or relationships that have accountability in them between leadership and your team. You know, whatever level of leadership you're at, you need to build trust and be accountable to your people. And ultimately, you want to be able to trust them and be able to hold them accountable too. It needs to go both ways. And so creating a system that allows you to try new things, to get feedback, to rapidly assess whether what you're trying is working or not, is going to help you build that accountable relationship, build trust, because it is promoting transparency both in communication but also in your actions. So I want to just provide one final story. And unfortunately, this story doesn't have a very happy ending. But it's an example of what happens when you don't have an intact feedback loop. So you're not getting rapid feedback information from your team when something's not working. So at one point in my career, I happened to be working for a large healthcare system. And a decision was made that physicians were not available enough. And I'm sure that this was based in important data. And the goal of leadership, I imagine, was to promote patient access. But what happened was around 5 p.m. on a Friday night, this email went out from the chief of primary care. And the chief said, look, we are changing schedules for all of the primary care or outpatient physicians, and you can't work a flexible tour anymore, a flexible schedule. Everybody's going to work eights, and the change is happening in a month. So that email went out. Everybody received it on Monday morning, and the taste in people's mouth was bitter because people felt like the information was being snuck through, like leadership wasn't actually willing to take ownership of this decision. And so we're trying to, you know, inform them without anybody noticing. I imagine that is not probably what was leadership's intention, but that's how lower level or frontline clinicians interpreted the communication strategy. And so what happened next was everyone's schedule really did change. And people lost their compressed schedules, they lost their flexible schedules, and physicians were really, really angry. And I heard things like from, you know, different physicians saying things like, you know, I rely on working 4 days a week or 3 days a week or whatever it was because I have childcare responsibilities. What's going to happen to my kid if I'm, you know, all of a sudden I'm working 5 days a week? I've got to scramble and figure this out. Or I was hired and I was guaranteed that I would have a flexible schedule. Or I'm about to go on maternity leave. I have no idea what's going to happen, how I'm going to be able to spend time with my baby. So obviously the parenting challenges resonate with me personally. And there were a whole host of other concerns that came up as well. But unfortunately, there was no opportunity for physicians to directly give feedback to the chief of staff or the chief of primary care. So the decision held. No one felt like they had power to influence the situation, and a lot of people left. So the physicians, long-standing physicians in this particular system, were just gone. And there was a pretty significant shortage of physicians that happened afterwards, which definitely did not help with patient access. So I share this story because sometimes we make decisions that seem really smart and make financial sense, or maybe make sense from a business sense. But when we present them to our employees, they don't actually make sense with people's real lives, or maybe they have unintended consequences or unintended harms. But we cannot know that unless we're talking with them, asking questions, and intentionally requesting feedback. Now, it is my recommendation that if you're going to make any kind of change like that you thoughtfully engage in this kind of systematic response cycle where you are implementing changes after you've engaged your employees, you've discussed the change, you've listened to their concerns, and you've gotten their buy-in. And then when you try something, you have that relationship to fall back on if something doesn't go perfectly. And something's always going to go imperfectly. Things are always not going to work out so well. But if we have the humility to expect that and to focus on relationship, we can save ourselves a lot of heartburn. So like with my example, what might have happened if leadership had taken the time to talk with physicians first? And maybe they did need to roll out that change, but was there a way to do it in a way that was more flexible, that would allow them to meet physicians' needs, to validate their distress, to hear what they wanted for the future, and create something beautiful together? So I'm going to leave you with those thoughts and hope that you are able to be really thoughtful as you go about creating change in your own organization and in your own team. Take care. Thank you for listening to Menders. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with a friend. And don't forget to head on over to mendinghealthsystems.com to get started creating cultural transformation for your healthcare team today. Let's create transformation magic.